Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now,
good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you are an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because of course all are welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art brought to you by the Blue Moon Diner. I'm the one they call Clinton, and I'm here with our distaff host, because this is the only staff we got, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton. How are you?
I'm well, Leslie. How are you?
It's a...
Oh, we're telling the truth? Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, we're telling the truth.
Then I'm a little...
Right? Can I just tell you that this past week, I think I met all of the stupid people in the world. Like, all of them just decided...
All of them?
All of them. All of them decided to descend upon me.
Wow.
Yes.
That sounds torturous.
I literally had to bite my tongue from calling someone an idiot so many times this week.
Did you have to hold back the hand?
Do you see the mark? There's a mark on my tongue from where
Did you have to hold back the hand? Did you have to pull yourself from slapping the stupid off of somebody?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Wow.
Yes.
That's a lot of
now,
stupid.
And see, the bad thing is that not all of them were people I have not been acquainted with before.
Returned stupid.
Like, stupid from places that you would not think stupid would come from.
Oh.
That's what I dealt with.
Oh.
All week.
Sneaky, surprise, stealth stupid.
Yes. And I'm just, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's been a week.
Wow.
It's been a week.
You have my sympathies.
Thank you.
You have my sincere sympathies.
Well, and to top it off, today is the 5-year anniversary of my grandmother's death. So, you know, it's just ending on a great note, too. Woo!
Not to be insensitive at all, for fear of bodily harm, at the very least, but you have so many relatives. Is there a day that goes by that isn't the anniversary of somebody's death, really?
Or a birthday.
Or a birthday.
Something.
Or
there's
an
always,
anniversary.
There's
or...
always something. There's always something. But, you know, I mean, Granny basically, you know, partially raised me. So,
yeah,
you know,
sure,
it's
sure.
Just, you know, it's one of the, this is the one I remember. It's one of my remember. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Dig in. Dig it. We should start the show with our parental advisory.
Oh, yes, let's do.
Indeed. For all you parentals out there, understand that at some point in the show, we'll try not to. Goodness gracious. Heavens to Betsy and to Murgatroyd and to little Mary Sue. We will try not to, but we may say the word Miss Feasor. Miss Feasor.
What? Okay. I've never even heard that word.
You know why? Because it's a bad word.
It's a bad word?
It's a bad word.
All right.
It's a bad word, and people try to keep it out of polite conversation.
And you know what? I'm going to take your word on it that it's a bad word.
That's good. Good. I'm glad. I hope that I shall not turn out to be a Miss Feasor in that action.
Oh. Oh,
God! Jesus! Let's head to our first guest. We are pleased to welcome back to home, so pleased to welcome back to Homegrown, two wonderful people from the Performers Exchange Project, Karen McLean Burke and Sean Richards. How are you guys doing?
Hi, we're fantastic.
We're great.
You guys are not just back here to Homegrown, you guys are back here in the States from having returned from where?
The Edinburgh Festival Fringe in Scotland.
Yes, indeed. We were pleased enough to have you guys on the show before, in preparation, before heading off to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival with your show, The Convolution of Pip and Twig. You have been there, you have done that, and you have survived to talk about it. So may I just jump in, how'd it go?
It went, I would say the summary is it went great.
It went really well. It was a success in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
We certainly had some things that were more difficult, disappointing. But we'll talk about all that. But the overall answer is, we were very, very pleased with how it all went.
Good, good. Let's dig into it, shall we? The Fringe. How many other shows at the Fringe?
I think there's like 3,000 performances. Is that correct?
Happening around that amount.
Oh.
A lot happening at the same time.
300 venues ish, mm-hmm. give or take. Yeah.
And how was your venue? Was it because you guys had scouted the venue before?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, the venue was great. We had a particular conundrum in that, although the show is only two performers, and we did not want a very large house, because why would a group that's never been to the Edinburgh Fringe want a huge house to fill? That would just be sort of depressing. But we did need a lot of space on stage, and those two things don't go together that much at the Edinburgh Fringe. So,
right.
So we went combed through the list of 300 venues. We found about 13 or something, and we saw something in basically all of them, and sort of had then a short list of places where we could fit the show, and chose from that. And it worked great. The space itself worked great. There's some, some challenges that I think are probably pretty much across every venue, which is that it's not super quiet necessarily at the Fringe. Most spaces are being built in buildings that are not theaters, so there's mm-hmm. often not a total blackout. And
are you doing shows since there are so many shows, are you guys doing shows at the time that we would expect them in evenings? Are you doing shows during the day? Is there a regular performance schedule? I mean,
mm-hmm. yes, our slot was at 6:40.
Okay, so there are so the Fringe itself organizes slots.
Slots, yes, okay. But it starts as early as 10. Other shows start as early as 10:30, like children's shows in the morning, and then it goes into late night type things. So ours was 6:40 every day. Yeah. We got into the space at 6:15, right after the show.
Because you were sharing the space.
Yes, we share exactly all day. Right. They have something programmed, and we have our stuff stored in a room, and the previous show comes out. We rush in. We have a very tightly timed setup schedule that our technical director, Zap McConnell, ran, and we pulled things out. We got set up in we got it pretty fast. We got it down to pretty fast, but it was about 20 minutes, and then we did the show at 6:40 every night. And then it was 45 minutes, and then we had about 10 minutes to get out and pack it up, and then the show after us was coming right in. So that was a big part of our experience, was time management and all that. Mm-hmm. What were you saying?
That's it. Yeah.
So were there any surprises in dealing with the space, or any things that popped up that weren't there when you initially scouted it?
I don't think so. I mean, I think there's this stuff that you imagine. There's what the space is going to look like on paper and how much you can imagine what you're going to do with that. And then there's being there in real time. So not once we arrived, but sort of shortly before we left, we kind of realized that the space they have is backstage. It's really like a pass. Oh, our thing we move off stage and turn into another thing is not going to fit in that space. So we had to rent some pipe and drape to make sort of a side wing to be able to take some stuff on and off. And we didn't realize until we got there that there wouldn't be a total blackout. I mean, it's not like there's a window or anything, but it just wasn't possible to get it all the way to blackout. And just little things, like you don't know exactly what the lights are until you're there. So your tech rehearsal is basically sorting that kind of stuff out. Here's ish what we want the light plot to look like, and here's the reality of what's in the ceiling, and making that match or come to a meeting place in the middle. But I don't think there were any really huge surprises that like that. It's all the details. The details are things you don't see until you get there.
Yeah, we had our set delivered to our apartment. We had to get the set over to the space, and then wait outside until the next group was done. And so there's all those things that are just take,
So what was the marketing part like? Because, I mean, when I did DC Fringe, they were amazing with, hey, here are the places around where you can put postcards. They gave us three different events to like come and pass out postcards and talk to people. So what was that part of it like?
That's a big sort of semi-exhausting part of it. But
was that your non-performance day?
That was every day.
So yeah, every day we had to get out and market in some way.
Yeah, so the Fringe, the organization itself, is very helpful in that they have a lot of advice to give, but it is an open festival, so there is a lot of that that's just you figuring it out as well. There's a part of town, the Royal Mile, which is sort of the kind of heart of the Fringe and the busiest part. So a lot of people will go there to hand out flyers. Everybody has flyers. And by the end of the Fringe, well, okay, by the second week of the Fringe, you're pretty exhausted just with receiving the flyers that come at you as you walk down the street. And so there's the Royal Mile, and that's a place that people go and hand out flyers. There's a lot of sort of Fringe-sanctioned busking that also happens in that space. But pretty much anywhere in town that you get. And we actually found that the we did do the Royal Mile a couple of times, but just the sheer number of people and the number of other people trying to hand things out and trying to find a space to be that isn't sort of stepping on the toes of someone who's paid for a busking spot. It just was, it didn't actually seem like the most efficient use of our time. So our favorite spots wound up being places on the Meadow Walk. The Meadows is a really large park that, especially when the festival is in full swing, there's a circus hub there and there's some intersections that lead to some main performance hubs, and that was a really great place because there were a lot of people coming by, but not so many that you sort of, your eyes started to swim and you just got instantly.
Yeah, and it's very overwhelming trying to engage the public. What I found, we were really lucky because we got a lot of good feedback in that way. Sean and I always were dressed as Pip and Twig in our twin outfits. We had a thing that we did coming from our apartment all the way in, and then people responded really well to that. I mean, they'd smile. They would smile in spite of themselves often if they didn't want to smile. They would come to us and say, what is this show? Tell us about it. Zap and Opal both were holding umbrellas that had our flyers dangling with clips, and people, this was Zap's design, and people come up to her, to them, taking them, wanting them. They liked the image a lot, the Catherine D design.
Oh, nice. And there's a nice voluntary aspect.
Well, that's
it.
And so many times you feel like you're having to assault people with these, and to have people come to us and even just having people walk past us and smile because we are Pip and Twig and our little scarves and our purses, they just, you know, there was just, that helped keep our spirits up because we had a feeling that we were doing something that was not just beating something into the ground.
And if our listeners want to go to our Facebook page, I think that one of the photos we have up there is of you guys in your Pip and Twig costume, if you don't have an idea of what they're talking about.
Yeah, and our website too, pipandtwig.com, we've posted some new pictures too as well of us at the Fringe.
So what were your audiences like?
Small.
It was small, and we knew that would be part of it. We were hoping by the third week that it would pick up, that hopefully we would get
word of
mouth that would help then fill it more, and that just didn't happen. So that was something that we had, our audiences were lovely, and then we had friends and family visiting as well that helped fill it and make it. Overall, that was a disappointment.
Right.
But we did get press in. Some of the reviews we got did not print until the last day. That didn't help our house.
Right.
After the last day.
One of our reviewers.
A 4-star review on the day after we closed. At the same time, a lot of people don't get reviews.
Yeah. Right. So
a review from a national paper, which is a big deal. Our publicist, who we loved, was super excited about that. And so we did come away from there with a review, and that's super useful to be able to say.
Yeah.
Newspaper in Edinburgh thought our show was great, and here's a review.
That there was a translation problem, that, you know, an international audience trying to understand something, you know,
you mean
severely
like,
American?
why would the audiences be small? You mean?
Yeah.
I don't know, and I think the reality is they're small for probably the vast majority of shows, first of all. And second of all, I think it can be, you know, we've floated some theories, and ultimately I just don't know. I mean, there are venues that have a little bit more of their own reputation, and so there's probably some momentum you get automatically from that because people go there. They have maybe multiple venues really centrally located around a place where there's an awesome place to sit and drink beer and hang out. And that probably helps, although our venue does have multiple venues and definitely had their own press office. And I'm not insinuating they weren't doing that work, but there are what they call the big four, and I think people pay attention to them. And there's some built-in momentum from that. I think another thing we considered is that the poster looks very whimsical and childlike, and there might have been a lot of people thinking that it was a children's show, which was an assumption we knew people would make, but I think maybe expected just because it's the Fringe and it's a more sophisticated, often theater-going audience, that they wouldn't be quite as pigeonholy, and that was maybe more consistent than we thought it would be. And so then you wonder if... well, if your show's at 6:40 and everybody thinks it's for kids, are you, you know, are there people who would have brought their kids that didn't because it's at 6:40, and are there people who would go see a play if they knew it wasn't for children, in quotes? There's also people who do probably more work promoting than we did in terms of being out on the street, either because they were able to have street teams, like multiple people. And there's just a limit to how much you can do and have your show not suck. So that's the balance we had to take. We did a lot of promotion, but we definitely were also protective of the fact that we needed to do other things, and we needed as performers to not be dragging in and giving lame-o.
Yeah, because we were performing as well as we're the producers of it. So Sean and I are just trying to balance that. two roles.
18 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. If you're just tuning in, hey, welcome. How's your Sunday so far? You up yet? You got the coffee? We're sitting here talking with Sean Richards and Karen McLean Burke from the Performers Exchange Project about their recent tour to Edinburgh, Scotland, at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Ooh, I love that you do accents.
I love that you love that I do accents. Very few people do. So with that many acts going on simultaneously in one festival, is there the opportunity for there to even for there to be some type of buzz around? Is there opportunity for there to be word of mouth, since there are so many people there to see so many different things?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you see it happen. It's just not it's not likely to happen to you, but I think it's one of those things that you do the things you can to work towards it, first and foremost, hopefully having a good show. And then rarely it will happen. I mean, I think the show has to be, well, I shouldn't say has to be really good, because there are always going to be things that get reviews and then you go see it and you find them really disappointing. But generally speaking, the show has to be good. And sometimes people get that convergence of the show being good and the marketing being good and the reviews coming out really early and being really strong. And yeah, we definitely saw, that happen to other performers, and I don't know that that meant they left and made any money. I'm sure that they probably didn't, but we saw a convergence of like, wow, okay, that they got some really good, the show was really good, and they've got some really good reviews kind of out of the gate. And then you could see on social media, people start to talk about it. And presumably, I think they had some pretty decent audiences. But yeah. And then some people come in with buzz because they're basically famous.
People know them, and we, you know, people don't know us over there, which is fine. You know, that's the reality.
So thinking back to what made you want to go to the Fringe, to take this piece to the Fringe, and thinking of your experience, did the experience satisfy what you wanted to get from the experience? How do those two sync up now? And what were you looking for? What were you looking for? And what did you get? And how did it look?
The ability to perform for 3 weeks almost straight on a piece and in front of an international audience have the play develop and deepen and grow because of a 3 week run like that was the play really benefited. I mean, our work benefited. We we grew so much from this.
Can you
so
go into detail?
Ways.
Like, in what ways did the play benefit? In what way did your work benefit?
Well, for me, I would say that getting to being a anxious performer, I'm not one of those people that like rolls in casually eating my dinner pizza and joking with my comrades and then strolling onto stage. And I probably never will be, but as somebody who is a very anxious performer and highly ritualized and all of that stuff, it was good to see that with that many repetitions, some of that even for me falls away, and you get to a place where you can start to have a little more faith that you've, especially with a show like this, where you really have worked on it a lot. Not, you know, it wasn't like a 7-week rehearsal process or six, whatever is standard. I don't know, but to let go of some of that normal, just worrying about messing it up and being kind of an anxious performer, and to get a chance to have faith that I know the show, because of course I do, and stop trying to make sure it doesn't, that it goes okay, and can sort of be in that place of actually working on things on stage while you're performing.
And relax and enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah. And, but have something that you're doing, which is something that we might do maybe in rehearsal, but can be difficult to translate to stage, where you're not just doing something you've locked in, which is not necessarily bad, because if you've done a lot of work, then you're showing people something, but to sort of ease up a little bit and actually say, oh, okay, I'm going out there tonight with this thing I'm working on, and I'm actually going to work on it and let it breathe a little bit and work on that. So that was super useful.
I think that's what a lot of people don't realize, especially in live theater, that, you know, once you get into that repetition, sometimes, you know, a light bulb comes on in the middle of a show one night and you're like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
Ooh, let me try that. And yeah. And when it works, it's like, yes,
right. Yeah,
yes,
the
keeping that.
He is doing that without letting everything else fall apart and keeping the structure and the,
yeah,
you know, we're very structured in what we do on stage. And so, but letting that breathe and letting it work. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we definitely had, you know, we definitely had conversations, especially in the first 2 weeks when our director Martha was there, based on stuff that's happening on stage, or sometimes even based on reviews. It's not like, you know, we got some bad reviews too. So
mm-hmm.
Having that experience, the reviews were super useful. In Charlottesville, there are no reviews.
Right.
Maybe they'll bring some reviews back. That would be great.
Yeah.
But it's really useful to perform in a place where people don't know you and they aren't.
They don't have any preconceived notion.
Well, it would be great if they could bring a good reviewer, which I don't think I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I'm going to stay out of that.
Well, Clinton has a thing about reviews. It's,
oh,
yeah.
Well,
it's going to take therapy to get over it. It's okay. Well, we just deal.
It's going to take the rest of the world realizing I'm right.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But it was really useful to have reviews from people that, don't already have preconceived notions or aren't going to tell you they enjoyed it, even if they hated it.
Yes.
That can happen a lot in a small town where,
yes,
even if you directly ask people, there can be people who are resistant.
Oh yeah. That's why I have specific people that I ask when I do something, 'cause I know that they'll tell me the truth. And I also know them well enough that I'll know when they're lying.
Yeah. So. Well, and part of it too is getting to know your own work enough to be able to take from what someone says to
be objective,
to hear some things and say, okay, I can completely disregard that because that's either something that I feel really strongly is not right or whatever,
mm-hmm,
or that's a matter of taste, or
right,
they misunderstood, or whatever the thing is, and feel confident that you know what you're talking about. That's super useful and important.
Yeah.
And then to also get a review from somebody that, you know, your first impulse is, you know, wow, that was super ungenerous and you're a jerk.
Right.
And then translate what they said into something that's actually useful for you and that you can use.
Thank you guys so much for coming back and telling us how your experience went. 'Cause, you know, having done a smaller Fringe over here, I was very anxious to hear how you guys fared in another country.
Yeah.
What's up with Pip and Twig after this? Do you shelve it? Do you move on to the next project?
Well, I think the short answer is we will probably continue to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
We feel like, I think we both feel pretty confident that we have a good show, but I think we want it to be a really, really good show. So
yeah,
we keep working on it. But one thing we should say before we leave is a thank you, obviously, to everybody who supported our work. We're very happy to say we successfully are going to cross all our T's on our budget and have paid all of our contributors, and we feel really good about that. And we want to thank the Hamner Theater, who has been operating as our fiscal umbrella for this past year.
Yes.
Which is a tremendous service and very helpful. And we could not have done it without Boomi and Hamner and Jay.
Yes.
And all our donors, our families, and also our team, Martha, Zap, Sean.
Yeah.
Martha, Zap, Opal, and Jim.
And everybody who watched our show, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much.
You guys.
Thanks for having us. We really appreciate
and
it.
And we will definitely have you back next time. When you get it up again in Seville, come and talk to us
Absolutely.
About it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
21 minutes past the hour. 27 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. Let's talk about some of the stuff, art going on locally in this town. Currently running from now until September 29th, the American Shakespeare Center's summer fall season, September 29th, around the corner. You've got till then to see Twelfth Night, King Lear, Henry VI, Part 2 by Shakespeare, and of course the modern musical Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. This is the last day for auditions for Chicago, bum bum, and all that jazz at Four County Players. For more info, go to 4cp.org. September 20th, it's the open mic night at the Anteroom. September 23rd, the Virginia Quarterly Review and the Bridge PAI present the Charlottesville Reading Series. This month, it's Garnet Cadigan, Kelly Jo Ford, and Scott Weaver. And here are just some of the musical options that you've got available to you in this wonderful town of ours. Today, Gina Sobel hosts this month's Teen Music Showcase at the Pro Reynada Farm Brewery with her own music students. That's going from 2 to 4 p.m. this afternoon. September 21st, Waterside Wednesdays at Glasshouse Winery continues. This week features Jason Burke, our man with the plan. Also September 21st, Aaron Lunsford and Charles Owen at the Bebedero. Johnny B. and the Goods at the Whiskey Jar. Larissa in the Middle. Larissa, the front person for the Illusionistics. She's out playing solo tunes at Heritage on Main. September 22nd, Stanton's Kiz Carter and Juke Jackson at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. September 22nd also, the Michael Ellswick Gathering at Fellini's. September 23rd, the Sally Rose Band at Glasshouse Winery, the Pollocks at the Bebedero, and Harrison Berg's Who Shot John at the Whiskey Bar, Gull with Fuan and Zoo and Zoo at Twisted Branch Tea Bazaar, and also on the 23rd, the Charlottesville Symphony Orchestra opens its 2016-2017 season with Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade, plus works by Greifs and Dan Welker. September 24th, Robert Joss Bay Express at Fellini's. Madly Backwards at Wild Wolf Brewing Company, The Duck Brothers at Rapture, LG and Friends at the Whiskey Jar. Oh, and me turning pages. Oh, September 24th, Gina Sobel with Incognito and Willie D at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. Once again, you know, every Sunday, Travis Elliott's down there at Rapture. Every Monday, it's the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Wednesday, it's the open mic night at Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. It's Bob Bonetta at Cafe Couture and the Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. Every Thursday, it's the Woolen Writers Revival, hosted by Will Thomas Reed and Brian Craddock at Firefly. And also, if you can't take that, head on down to the Downtown Mall and Miller's and catch out the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of the wonderful artistic events going on in our wonderful, artistically eventful town. If you are an artist and you have an event, then please let us know about it. www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or you can snag us at our handy dandy email address, homegrown947@gmail.com.
You're not talking anymore?
I am going to talk. I thought you were going to do a drop. This is Homegrown, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. Blue Moon Diner, giving you breakfast all day, every day, with brunch on Saturday and Sundays, and carefully constructed diner food in the afternoons and evenings. And speaking of the evenings, Blue Moon Diner favors us, delights us by supporting visiting and local artists this week. Tuesday, Texas-born, Nashville-residing, Grammy-nominated bluesman Ray Cashman. On Wednesday, Jim Wave, playing the country like only Jim Wave can. Thursday, our man David Tewksbury.
David!
Woohoo! Friday, Pittsburgh's Young Lungs and Raleigh, North Carolina's The Great Fall, all going down at the Blue Moon Diner.
Can I just tell you, I went to Blue Moon yesterday.
Did you?
For like a little brunch.
Little brunch?
Thing going on.
Little brunch.
Took someone who had never been there before. I was, mm-hmm. First of all, I was flabbergasted. They'd never been there.
Right.
But, oh my God.
And they were like, oh.
Exactly. I was like, no, really, you have to come with me. This is, you haven't been to Blue Moon? Like, where, you've been living under a rock? Is that what it is?
Slap them with the diner stick. What kind of Miss Fizor has been keeping them from experiencing what diner food is like when the moon is blue?
I know.
That's right.
But they loved it.
I'm glad to hear. And I'm not surprised. 32 minutes past the hour, you're listening to Homegrown, your show about local art. Hey, let's hit our next guest. All right, before we go to our next guest, we've got to welcome our guest host, joining us at Homegrown again, the main man, Chris Ballmer.
Hi, Clinton. How are you?
I'm well, Chris. Thank you for coming and joining us today.
My pleasure.
And now we're going to turn to our guest. First time on Homegrown. He's a local artist. Specifically, we're going to talk about his paintings today. Mr. Nim Pedersen.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well, Nim. How are you?
I'm doing good. Doing good.
Good, 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 good. I don't know how to start it. How do we start?
Well, the reason Nim is here is, and by the way, I've known Nim since he was a youngster.
Youngster.
A youngster.
That's true. That's true.
Not only is he a very fine artist, but he has a show up right now in town. So you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I do. Right now, for the rest of the month of September and possibly into October, but I have to check with Live Arts, I have a group of paintings and collages at Live Arts on the second and third floors outside the two theaters, and it's entitled Intermission, and it's figurative work of an expressive quality, and I hope you can go see it. And just keep in mind also that Live Arts is open usually in the afternoons, except for, I think, Monday. So if you're not going to see a play, you can still go see my art.
So for people who might not be up on ArtSpeak, such as I, figurative work, could you go into what does that mean?
Well, the main subject would be the human figure as opposed to the landscape or a building or something more abstract.
Cool. Although we can talk about levels of abstraction, because certainly they're not realistic.
That's true. I'd say the two main influences on my art were, first of all, the art that my father, who was a painter, made, and that was very expressive figuration. Now, if you think about artists like Van Gogh and Munch and all of the German expressionists who were very prominent around the time of the First World War and into the Second World War, then if you looked at those artists, you would have a good idea of what expressive figuration is. It is, in a sense, an abstracted form of the human figure.
There was one who made me think of, I do not have the art training that I wish I had or maybe should have, that made me think of Chagall. Is that right? Does that make sense?
Yes, you can. I would definitely say he was an expressionistic painter. Yes, and so was Picasso. A lot of artists who didn't paint strictly realistic figures can fall into that category, you know, in a broad way.
Cool. So, as you know, I come from the theater world. And a phrase that I frequently like to use is the tyranny of realism, because so much of theater is either realistic or naturalistic, and so much of what people are used to is realistic or naturalistic that it becomes very hard for people, both audiences and artists, to break themselves out of those patterns. And I think I certainly have that when dealing with visual art. So if I could just ask some questions, when you're doing
expressive figurative work. I mean, for me, like if you're doing, like I can, if you're doing realistic figurative work or portraiture, I could see how you could see where you were going, right? It's like I'm trying to make it look like the person who's in front of me.
Right.
So when you're doing this expressive work, what is your guide?
Well, the more I paint and the older I get, the more I have found that the less I think about making pictures, the more fun it is. So my guide is really nothing. I think what I do benefit from is taking several years of life drawing when I lived in New York, and sort of I think that gave me a good foundation of the figure and a starting point from which I can just kind of leap into, you know, strange outcomes based on, you know, what would be a realistic face or portrait. So, people ask me that often, and I say, well, I don't really have any preconceived idea of what I want to paint or what it's going to look like. So a lot of it is, you know, experimentation, improvisation, finding things that occur without reason or without any foresight.
And what kind of materials are you working in these days, or and particularly for this show, what were your media?
Okay. Well, this show, there are several large collages, which are I made a number of years ago after my father died, and they were sort of, I think his death urged me in a very strong way to just make a number of large collages. And they are basically, I start with a big piece of mostly I use printmaking paper, which is nice and thick and stands up to a lot of work. And then I usually glue down something like newspaper, some kind of printed matter. And then on top of that, I start adding ink, pen, and ripped up pieces of paper. And often I take old drawings and rip those up and make new people, new images with old pieces of drawing. So it's, I guess you would call it mixed media. So there's some of those in the show. And then there are also a small number of oil paintings, which are oil on canvas. And I think one is oil on wood. So two kinds. And then a couple of pieces are, they're almost like, you know, acrylic and ink drawings on a large scale.
Yeah, the thing that strikes me about the mixed media pieces is that they are, is that frequently I had to really look to notice that there were different levels of media in them. They had blended and gestalted so much that they looked like a single thing. Is that intentional?
No, but I think what I do like to do with collage is have it look like it has a certain kind of uniformity in its final state. You know, I mean, I also though like parts of it where you can see that the paper is crumpled and kind of sticking out. So it's sort of intentional, but again, it's just part of the process, which comes, you know, I sort of know when a collage is done, I don't want to really work on it anymore. But yeah, I mean, I like them to look like they were meant to be all together in a layer, so they form one kind of piece.
And how was showing in a not, what is not a traditional gallery space? Not that in this town people hang art everywhere, but I that's the first time I've ever seen a show of paintings or collages or, you know, art hanging on the wall at Live Arts, which I thought was a very interesting space to see your work in.
Yeah, and it's a nice space, too. I mean, it's
It is indeed, and I think this is something Live Arts only recently started doing, because I certainly wasn't aware of it until someone told me that they're hanging art there. And so it is a good space, and it would be, you know, also just a great place to, you know, expose your work, because people are in there, you know, regularly. And, yeah, it's certainly, I think it adds a lot of liveliness to the lobby. So, and as far as a alternative art space, you know, Charlottesville is filled with different places where you can show your work, as well as places which are difficult to show your work. So, you know, in my life here, I've sort of just, you know, made it my job to keep showing my work, and in a variety of places. And live arts is a new one, and it's I like it, you know.
Including occasionally, you have your work on the downtown mall, smaller work for sale.
That's true. Yeah, some of you might recognize the art snacks table in front of the fountain near the Paramount, and that is my table. And
can I say how much I love that name, Art Snacks?
Art Snacks, yes, just a taste. That's something I started doing about 3.5 to 4 years ago, and I just decided to go and get a permit from City Hall so that I could set up in a designated space on the mall. And you can basically get a permit and sell whatever as long as it's not firearms or alcohol or drugs. And I wanted to have small, affordable works that people could buy, especially people maybe who don't go into galleries, or maybe they don't go into galleries anymore because it's too expensive, or it's just something that doesn't cross their you know, normal life. And I also wanted to promote my larger works, and you know, so it was part marketing and part just, you know, seeing what it would bring. And so it's been good. You know, I can't do it as much as I'd like to because I do other things to make money. So, you know, but I do it when I can.
So when you say affordable, what level are you talking about?
I'm talking about $10 for an original small drawing to sometimes I have a small oil painting for $100. Most of my prices are in the $10 to $35 range, maybe $50 for larger matted and framed drawings and collages.
And if I may ask, what kind of reactions do you get? Because I imagine that setting up in such a public space, I mean, you've got so many different types of people going up and down the mall, and you're right there to see their reactions and for them to talk to you and for them to interact with you. What is that like?
Well, it's actually turned out to be really fun. One of the things I really enjoy is the group of vendors that I've gotten to know, who are my companions down there. And as far as meeting people, what I like about it is that I've made new friends, and I've had you know, a lot of people who didn't know anything about my art and now know something about it, and I've had people come back and for more, and so that's been good. The mall itself is, I mean, after a while you get to see the ebb and flow of daily life there, and it can be pretty predictable. I think the one thing that we have to battle always is the weather. And occasionally there might be a business owner around there who wants something changed. Like recently a business owner on the mall wanted the vendors to have to pay more money to set up their tables, which we all thought was pretty absurd.
Right, I read about that. What did you think about that?
Well, I was kind of amazed to find out who it was, because I have actually bought so much stuff from his store, usually in the form of coffee and ice cream, that, you know, I thought I was actually good for his business.
I think wasn't his point the idea that that store owners have to pay a certain amount to the city, and so he was saying that sidewalk vendors should have to pay the same amount.
I think he thought that we were getting somewhat of a free ride, and I think what he said was he wanted a level playing field with the vendors and the store owners. And, you know, as I told a reporter from Siva Weekly, I said, well, you know, we don't have infrastructure, and we don't have electricity, and we don't have toilets, and we, you know, when it rains, we're out of business. So, in a, and we do have to pay the city for our permits, and we also have to get a citywide peddler's license. So we do have costs. And, you know, I really don't think you can equate a store on the mall and a vending table, because they are not of the same ilk, really. Mm. Plus, I would just add that in general, business for vendors, since I've started there, has diminished, and it's not that great these days. The city has put up more restrictions for where you can set up, and they've also raised our fees that we have to pay. So, like a lot of businesses,
oh, that,
I mean,
that's great.
In
that
a sense,
helpful.
We have to pay more for rent, you know, as
it's hard out there on the streets for a working artist.
It is indeed hard, yeah. I mean, I wish I could say this was more than a labor of love, but largely that's what it is.
And how's the balance between labor and love these days?
Well, I'm doing a lot of labor to pay the bills, so it's, you know, I have to balance my art life and, you know, the pragmatic aspects of, you know, bills and all that stuff. So
what are you working on now? I mean, art-wise, you got something?
What I'm working
on the easel?
Well, I do. I have a number of paintings on the easel, and what I really actually want to do now is paint much larger paintings. So I kind of somehow I want to be able
Give us a feeling of what type of size range you're talking about.
Well, I'm talking about
in comparison to,
like, maybe, you know, like, say, I think of for me, a large painting, especially given my the size of my studio, would be maybe like 60 inches wide. So maybe 5 feet by 4 feet. So that's that is, to me, large. I mean, it's not you know, monumentally large, but it is for me big. And I do have a few paintings near that size that I've been working on, but right now what I have to do is raise a bunch of money for the basic materials. And I mean, I tell you, I've used cheap oil paint and it's really almost not worth it. I mean, it's just, art is expensive. And I'm doing my annual applying for art grants, which I do every year, and perhaps one day I will get a nice grant.
In the meantime, people need to head downtown, see your show at Live Arts, buy your art snacks. And
exactly. I mean, I'm happy. I've sold two of the pieces in the show at Live Arts, which is great. And
oh, awesome. Congrats.
Thank you. And as for my art snacks, I'm busy all weekend catering, so I'm not going to be on the mall this weekend. So, you know, that's life.
It's the tyranny of the day job should be
the tyranny of the day job. Exactly. I know.
Should be another phrase that I use. Nim, thank you so much.
Hey, I appreciate it. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to talk to you. And go see my art at Live Arts, and hopefully you'll see me on the mall with
my
snack table.
Yeah, really. See the show. The show is great because Clinton and I have both seen it, and it's wonderful.
All right. Thanks so much, Nim, for coming in and talking to us. So I guess it's all me, right? Bob Marley said, "Beginnings are scary. Endings are sad." I completely agree. Beginning something new can be the scariest thing you ever do. It can also be something exciting and lovely. A beginning is also a possibility for greatness, and that's good. As artists, we love beginning a new project. We love the energy it gives us to pick up something that lives on a page and bring it to life, or will something that only existed in our mind's eye into being. And there's doubt. There's always doubt that it won't be good enough. There's anxiety that someone won't like it. There is that pit in your stomach that tells you that what you have just created isn't good enough. We all battle it to varying degrees. But every once in a while, you don't have to wonder. Every blue moon, there's that moment when you just know that what you just did is good, amazing, even. Those moments can be rare for artists. They are rare because the good artists are always pushing themselves to be better. We're always striving to amaze or move our audience. In those moments, all the scary stuff in the beginning seems worth it. In those moments, the work doesn't seem like work. It just flows, and it's magic. Then we hit the other side of it, the ending. And as Bob said, they're sad. Sad because the thing that had sustained and delighted us is over. Sad because the process we love so much has come to an end. We wish we could make it longer. We wish it wasn't over, and we grieve just a little. I'm going through that myself right now. I wish the show wasn't coming to an end. I wish we had more time. Mostly because I know I will miss these wonderful people I have met. I'll miss Brandon's dry wit, Reese's big personality, Jenny's wisdom, Ashley's naivete, Savannah's willingness to laugh, and Jen's sarcasm. I'll miss Scott's boyish charm, Anna, Diana's guidance, and Jackie's leadership. I began this process not knowing any of them. I was the outsider, walking in on friendships already formed through years of working together. They welcomed me. Each one has been a gift I never could have expected, a gift I didn't know I was longing for. So I'm a little sad, but I'm also happy. I am so happy I got to know all of them for this little space of time. And although it was scary in the beginning, I feel like we've made a little family, and that makes me smile. Bob Marley also said, "Everyone is going to hurt you. You just have to decide who is worth the sacrifice." I just want to say to the entire cast and crew of Five Women Wearing the Same Dress, it was worth it. I'd do it again. And I love you all. And that's the weekly rant.
Really?
What?
Really?
What? I can't, like, take a moment?
Really? I mean, a moment. There were several moments during that when I was wondering what the hell you were talking about.
Really,
like,
Clinton?
And then suddenly it becomes clear you're talking about yourself. Really, it was all just about, all that was just all about you.
Well, I'm fabulous, so why not?
All about the ending of Five Women Wearing the Same Dress. You know, that was like weeks ago.
Well, we ran out of time last week. That's why.
So what? Recycled rant? Is that what we're getting now?
Oh, my God. Clinton.
Is that what we're getting now? Recycled rant?
Uh-huh.
You know.
You know,
like,
you just can't be happy about anything, can you? You just have to dump on absolutely everything. Like, you're the only person I know who walks around not looking for the silver lining, but looking for the black lining.
You know what Bob Marley also said? He also said, "Pirates, just de rabbi, sold I to the merchant ship." Do you want to turn that into a rant? Do you want to turn that into something having to do with?
You know what?
I
could turn anything into a rant.
And I saw that show. You guys
it.
Weren't even wearing the same dress. You guys had separate dresses on. Don't think that wasn't the case.
Oh my God! Really? You're going to go there?
You.
You're going to go for the cheap joke? Oh, wait. And I
also
forgot who I was talking to.
Let me tell you about Bob Marley. He's dead. He's gone. He's out of here. And you're not,
gonna
you're go- time.
You're not going
spend,
to be mad about Bob.
You're not
going to
spend time dealing with him. You know who's also dead? John Lennon's dead. You want to pull up quotes from him? You know who's also dead? James Garfield. President James Garfield's dead. You want to pull out quotes from him? Things end. They shut down. They don't go on forever. And you don't sit there whining about how they've gone, the missing someone's wonderful willingness to laugh. Guess what? Savannah's still laughing somewhere. Not a problem.
Yes, I know. I'm going to see her later this afternoon.
See, then what are you whining about?
I wasn't
one
whining.
One thing you're talking
I
about
was
things
just,
ending, and
I
also
was not
things aren't
whining.
Even ending.
I was paying proper homage to the ending of something, which, oh, I don't know, is what mature people do.
No, you know what we call that? Paying proper homage to the ending of something? Weakness! That's what we call that. Rapid sentimentality! That's what we call that. The real person sees something is over, doesn't even acknowledge it physically or verbally, just sort of
Right, because we live in a society that tells us to never feel or think about anything, and it really makes me sad that you have bought into that crap.
Oh yeah, let's throw that card down. Couldn't wait to turn this into some type of gender thing.
Could we? You're the one who made it a gender thing.
So is
with
this
your general...
No, I'm not the one who made it a gender thing.
Yes, you
I'm
are.
I'm not the one at all. I didn't say anything about it being a gender thing.
Oh my God, I was talking
about dresses. What are you talking about here?
You know what? I am so sorry. I need to apologize to everyone.
Stop apologizing. You don't have to apologize for me. You don't have to apologize
for me. I want to thank Sean and Kara for coming in to talk about Pip and Twig. We want to thank Nim for coming in and talking to us. We're going to leave you with a little jazz to, you know, counteract what just happened, because I'm really not sure. There's medication involved, I'm sure, and you know, I'll give it to him and he'll be fine by next week, I promise. But you guys, you have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.